Hey, architecture firm owners and emerging leaders. Get ready for unparalleled insight into the development of a world-class architecture firm and a worldwide organization driving the digital transformation of the design and construction industry. With Build Smart, the podcast that's changing how our profession operates. We share the incredible stories behind innovation in the building industry with my friend and co-host, Patrick McLamey, FAIA, former CEO of the international architecture firm, HOK.
You know, Yamasaki's office or firm lasted during his lifetime. And when he passed away, I think that was the end of the Yamasaki office. Helmuth did not want that. He wanted a firm that would live out and grow beyond the founders.
In season one, discover the untold stories behind HOK's meteoric rise from 150 employees in St. Louis to a powerhouse with over 1,900 staff members and 27 offices worldwide.
You know, they weren't as polite as the Kojima people. That was just boom. And anytime you have a creditor, whether it's Kojima or the bank, that wants their money, unless you can raise money someplace else, you are out of business.
Bankrupt.
Bankrupt.
And hold on tight for season two, where Patrick takes us on a new adventure as chairman of Building Smart International, shaping the future of digital transformation in the design, construction, and operation of built assets.
Ian Howell, Ken Harold, and I, Ken was my technical representative from HOK. The three of us took a tour of Europe of 5 cities in 5 days. Very busy time.
Simply follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Smart now and uncover lessons that will transform you and your architecture firm.
This is the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast with Mark R. LePage, Episode 3, inspiring your everyday success in business, leadership, and life. Architects are storytellers. We all know stories inspired by architecture, stories of success and failure. Our greatest works of architecture hold stories that are passed down from generation to generation, no different than great works of art or a classic novel. Today on the podcast, we're talking to architect and storyteller Collier Ward. By day, Collier is an architect with the firm Casa Design in Huntsville, Alabama, but at every other waking moment, he's a storyteller. Sit back, relax, and listen as Collier tells us a short story that he wrote just for us at the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
There once was a boy who loved to draw and to paint and to make things. He was especially good at drawing, and he paid special attention to the details of what he drew. The boy noticed that how people reacted to his artwork. Parents and teachers and other adults praised and encouraged him. They prominently displayed his work on refrigerators and classroom walls. The kids, however, when they saw his work, often said, "I hate you." The boy knew that this was actually the highest praise. Later in his life, the boy was introduced to a special type of drawing called architecture. These drawings represented buildings in a new way. He was fascinated by the concept, drawings that could be built. "If I can please people so much with a flat, two-dimensional drawing," he reasoned, "how much more if people could actually walk through my work?" So thus, his course was set to study the new art form, architecture. School proved to be a little more difficult than the young man would have ever dreamed. Midway through his college years, he was having persistent thoughts of giving up. And he might have given up completely, but as life would have it, he met a girl. She believed in him. She married him. She gave him a baby for graduation. The struggles of college life and looming responsibilities of providing for a young family, it didn't weigh him down. In fact, the young man left school with a lofty dream to change the course of architecture. The young man was golden at his first job. All the principals wanted him on their teams. He earned the title of architect soon, and he moved on. Wherever he went, he was tireless, diligent, he was sacrificial. But somewhere along the line, he seemed to peak. He hadn't impacted the course of architecture. He had won no awards. He'd not been published. but he kept going. Eventually, one of his children was married and moved away. The other left for war. Change was in the air, but what would it bring? Then, suddenly, the bottom dropped out. The architect found himself unemployed, swept away in one of many waves of job cuts. He did everything a jobless man was expected to do to survive, day after day, month after month. The couple cut back on their living expenses. They looked for other work. They even sold their house. The course of architecture had finally changed, but not for the better, and not by this architect's influence. One day, having exhausted all leads and depleted most of his hope, he looked at his computer. It was a random story concerning industry layoffs. He looked a little deeper. He was not alone. He soon realized that many other architects were struggling too. Their stories were being brought to him through blogs and Facebook and Twitter. He looked at his computer in a new way. If the computer and the internet were bringing these stories of woe, couldn't they be used to tell stories of hope? Still without work, the mid-career architect began to blog and to tweet and to connect with other architects. He had hope again. Maybe this was a turning point. Maybe he could help other architects blog their way to success by telling their unique stories online. Well, an odd twist of fate and a family connection several states away led the man to a job interview and eventually to a new position. He was the only architect in this new firm. He was golden again. He showed his coworkers the way of architecture by day and blogged about storytelling at night. Online, an online friend one day, a fellow in the film industry actually, saw his passion for his fellow architects and for getting their stories out. He called one day and encouraged the architect not just to dabble in storytelling in a blog, but to go all out. "You should write a novel about this," the friend said. "You could write a novel by Christmas." Well, the architect took the challenge. A draft novel was completed by that Christmas, and another one was completed the following year. Eventually, the storytelling left the architect's desk and went out to the world. His novel was published. An independent filmmaker transferred another one of his narratives to the screen. Then a second novel was released. A new genre was recognized: architectural drama. The architect went on and cultivated other works by other designers. Some developed into novels, some were web series, some were television programs. But they all revealed the yet untold stories of architects and architecture. The public, always hungry for more entertainment, devoured the stories. They saw great design come to life in their own imaginations. They learned its worth. They appreciated its value. Eventually, the course of architecture was changed. Well, the architect eventually passed away. Few remembered his name, but they all enjoyed a world optimized by great architecture. The end.
That's a great story.
Well, thank you.
Do you know that guy?
I do know that guy. It's me. And I did two storytelling tricks in that. One, I told things that had already happened. Then I projected what I wanted to happen. Somewhere in that timeline is where I sit. I haven't had anything published yet, but I am writing and I am connecting with other industry leaders in the film and publishing industry, trying to make connections, you know, online and getting, you know, good support. So the goal is eventually get some stories published and help other architects publish or film or record their stories. And the idea, the big idea is that the general public will begin to really appreciate what we do. They think they know what we do, but if they knew the struggle, the agony and the ecstasy, they would probably appreciate us more and be willing to pay more, frankly. That's the goal.
Right. I mean, I see you, you and I have met online mostly through Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I often see your hashtag 1000 stories.
Right.
That architecture holds 1000 stories. What's the idea behind 1000 stories?
It's the idea, Mark, that our profession is a closed book. Like I said, a lot of people admire architects, but it's sort of an odd depiction of who we are, what we do. And I think if they like us that much, if they knew the true stories, if they knew the struggle in our schoolwork, the, you know, the struggles working with clients, how hard it really is to build something that meets the ideal that we have. But anyway, our profession is a closed book, and I believe that architecture as a profession holds those stories. They're there, and they're potential stories. They're yet untold stories. But it's up to us, the architects, to bring the stories forth. So when I tweet and I either find a good story about architecture, or I see where in the movies or in novels an architectural theme is brought forth, I use that hashtag. And I encourage others to use it. Anytime they tell a story that they want people to take note of, to go ahead and use that hashtag and make it, you know, a meme, make it what people will look for when they want to see a good architectural story, even if it's in the, you know, the 140 characters of a tweet.
So it's important for architects to tell stories. It's mostly, from your point of view, stories about architecture and why architecture is important and what we do and how we do it, correct?
Right, exactly.
Is there other reasons why architects should become good storytellers?
Yes, storytelling. If you go online and just sort of Google it, it's a breaking wave in marketing circles. There are people out there that actually go and train Fortune 500 companies on how to tell their stories. So it's something we should take advantage of. That's the simple answer. I can give you some resources on some of these things as far as storytelling goes from a business standpoint, if you like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. I think there's three ways that storytelling affects architecture, or that architects could take advantage of storytelling. And let me tell you what the three are. The first one is to know your story. You as a practitioner, you as a firm, you as an individual, even a student, you have a story, a very unique story about who you are, why you're on the planet, what you're doing. In the storytelling realm, there's an idea of origin story. Every superhero has an origin story, how Superman landed on Earth, how Batman became Batman. And in this storytelling practice, you investigate your own life, you search your own soul, and you figure out what your origin story is. Why are you a hero? And then you begin to apply that understanding of who you are to your business. A great resource for this is called GetStoried.com. A guy named Michael Margolis, he has a free download. It's a storytelling manifesto that goes over like 14 points of how this is done and how you can begin to understand your own story. So that's one aspect. It could be done as a firm or an individual, sort of a marketing retreat, and figure out what your story really is.
That's GetStoried.com?
GetStoried.com is that website.
Yep. Okay.
The second aspect of storytelling for architects is more in the presentation mode. And a really good resource, there's a lady named Nancy Duarte, and it's Duarte.com. And if you go there, it's prominently displayed her TED Talk. She gives a just an amazing talk about how she has studied storytelling for over 2 years. And she came upon a very simple but a very profound structure for stories. And again, her stories are not novels or films. She's more focused on presentations. And she takes this very simple graphic that she developed, and she overlays it on Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, and also a presentation by Steve Jobs at one of the Apple product releases. And she shows in very much detail how this structure is patterned by the great speakers and the great presenters of our day. Just real briefly, the structure starts out low, telling the way things are now. Martin Luther King was talking about the oppression that his people were under at that time. Steve Jobs was talking about the malaise of I think it was his iPhone. But
yeah, I saw that. It was a great presentation. I think it was the original iPhone.
Right. So you start out by telling what's wrong, and then you peak. You go up and you tell what could be. And this peak and trough thing can be repeated as often as necessary. But in the I Have a Dream speech, which everybody knows, at the end, there's a crescendo of man being judged by the content of his character, not the color of his skin, and children being able to play together. And it stirred the masses, and it still stirs people now. But Nancy Duarte saw that pattern, that he started low, talking about the oppression and the injustice, and he peaked several times, and then he ended on that high plateau. The little story I told, it's a guy's struggle, his peaks, his valleys, and then it ended with the whole world actually being changed by great storytelling. That hasn't happened yet. The I Have a Dream speech hadn't happened yet, but I put it out there for people to...
It's what could be.
What could be, for something for people to latch on to, because we want to hope. We want to see the vision. So that's the second. Know your story, then tell your story. And the last one, which is where my heart is write the story. The couple of drafts that I've written have been born in the month of November. There's a worldwide event called NaNoWriMo, which stands for National Novel Writing Month. The idea is to spend those 30 days and write a 50,000-word novel. They're not complete novels, obviously. I compare mine to a schematic design. All the pieces are there, but it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of collaboration to turn it into something publishable, turn it into a worthy design. But it's a great event. That website is nanowrimo.org. It's nanowrimo.org.
And I'll put all of these links on the blog, so anybody listening to this can go to the blog and find all these links.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I encourage other architects, be thinking about what is your story? What fictional story, what architectural hero would you like to see on the screen or in print? And be thinking about it, outline it, get it ready. And then in November, we'll take off. I don't know what I'm going to write next November, but I'm going to do it again. And it's just a great exercise, a great intense sort of a charrette kind of thing of getting the ideas down on paper. And then, of course, you have to come back and spend a year or more polishing. But it's just a great experience, and I hope other architects will join me next November.
And I'm sure that would help in other parts of your life as well. I know that when I start writing, when I started getting very intent and focused on writing on the blog, my writing got much better. And it got not only better in blogging, but it got better in everything I do, in my job proposals and my presentations and my business letters. They've all improved just from the practice of writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That happens.
And I would imagine by writing a novel, that would be even more intense.
It is. It's a different form of communication, but you're right. My letters and proposals and business correspondence is a lot tighter and a lot more effective because all the things you learn in novel writing, begin with the end in mind. You got to know how the thing ends, and then you work backwards. Same thing in any kind of written communication. What is that point you're trying to make, and then just kind of craft it back from there.
Do you think there's a benefit in what you learn in storytelling for those other documents, for those business documents and proposals and design? Well, certainly in design presentations with Nancy Duarte's proposal, that's what it's all about, or her presentation is all about that. But do you think there's an advantage to when you're putting together a job proposal rather than just hitting the facts and kind of just giving them your background? Is there a benefit to creating it more like a story where there is these highs and lows of what is and then what could be and what is and what could be? Is there a benefit for that, you think?
I believe there is. I haven't investigated it fully. The type of work we do here is military, and there's a format, there's a the limitation of text you can use. So in some circles, there may not even be a benefit, a use for that. But in more informal discussions or correspondence with a potential client or a building committee somewhere, yes, I do think that the storytelling, we're wired to be entertained and to hear stories. All of the prehistory of mankind was told from generation to generation, and eventually people started to write it down. But folks have sat around campfires and water coolers and wherever else and told stories. We do it do it today. So if the information you're trying to convey or the thing you're trying to convince someone of can be broken down to where there's a hero, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and there's a hopeful climax, anywhere where that applies, it can be used. And that's, as I say, it's a storytelling is a burgeoning thing throughout the marketing world, and people are trying to learn to tell stories that engage the listener rather than bullet points.
Right. What's the name of your novel? Or does it have a name yet?
It has a working title. The one I'm feverishly trying to edit this month is the working title is Someday. There's nothing significant in that that you could derive from that.
What's it
title.
About? You know, generally.
It's kind of like the story I just told. It's about a man who is passionate about design, and in his career, he's set up to be able to accomplish great things, and it's cut out from under him, and he struggles for quite a period of time trying to reach that ideal of, you know, matching a good client with a good budget and having a great outcome, and it's almost torturous what he's having to go through. There's a parallel story where in his first job, he falls in love with a young lady. Young lady happens to be the boss's daughter. So there's all kind of complications. Well, one of the standard storytelling is three acts with two plot points that are pivotal. The first plot point in this story, the man loses his job and his access to his lady in one fell swoop, one event. Turns his world upside down. The middle act is him struggling and some of the backstory developing. Then there comes another point where if he can risk it all, he can get his career back in line, win the girl, and save the day. So when I sat down a week before NaNoWriMo last November, I had no idea what I was going to write. My wife encouraged me. She said, put the other story aside and do something fresh. And I had no idea what I was going to write. And this is, I almost hesitant to say this, but it's almost a storybook, fairy tale kind of thing. You know, the prince saving the girl and living happily ever after. I mean, that almost sounds silly for me to say that, but that's what this thing has evolved to.
That makes a great story.
It was evolved to that. And if I can, and marketing wise, most novel readers are women. So if I, if it's got a little fairy tale in it, that might work.
Yeah. So, I mean, that your work with writing, do you look at it as a career, or is it sort of a side hobby?
Well, it's a hobby right now. There's no money in it right now. But I would like to, like the fella in the story I told at the beginning, I would love to work with Hollywood on projects where they have where they need an architectural consultant, or if I get good at it, to help train other architects, maybe have workshops or I don't know, you know, where I can blaze the trail, learn the hard lessons, and then tell other people so they can scoot through a little easier. But yeah, it would be great. It would be great to be able to make a living at that.
Right.
And then be able to dabble in architecture on the side when a great commission came along.
Right. I mean, you're another great example of an architect who has taken his passions and the things that he loves to do, seeking a market for what you do and taking an alternative path.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. My career has been somewhat on hold for a while. I'm employed and I enjoy my work, but it's not the type of architecture that people would think of. So I'm using that downtime, that away time, to do this. And like I say, I hope it's something that can be replicated, that if I have success, I will be able to show other people how to do it. Because I think there are other architects out there that are secret storytellers, novelists, filmmakers, and whatnot.
Yeah, I think so. That's why I wanted to speak with you, for two reasons. One, you know, I wanted to learn more about storytelling. You know, from my own point of view, I have a lot of plans with the blog and with the podcast, and I want to be a better storyteller. But I also see you as an inspiration of taking what you're doing. And moving forward with it and doing something other than just kind of standing behind a drafting board or a computer and doing the traditional practice, but you're taking it to a different path.
Mm-hmm. I use an analogy sometimes that architecture is, will always be my first love, but writing is a mistress that I just can't quit.
Your website is buildingcontent.com. Tell me a little bit about that and what your plans are for that.
Well, it started back about 4 years ago as it was going to be a how-to blog for architects. And, you know, I looked around after a couple of years. The Bob Borsons and the Jody Browns and countless others were just knocking it out of the park, you know, with viewers and feedback. And I realized architects are pretty much do-it-yourselfers at heart, and they don't really need someone to train them how to blog. They're going to figure it out. And many have. And somewhere along the line, I shifted from being a how-to blog to this idea of storytelling and shifting from, blogging for architects kind of theme to the storytelling theme. So now I write more about trends in publishing and Hollywood insights and that sort of thing. It's not truly, people would look at it and say, this isn't an architecture blog, but it is.
Yeah. Well, it's all inspiration, you know, for architecture and for taking what you know in architecture and applying it to other things.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Probably by my email address. It's collier1960@hotmail.com. I'm also on Twitter under that same handle. And LinkedIn and all the other standard places, but an email, drop me a line. And if there's something you're working on, if you need some inspiration, any of these websites that I've mentioned, I can put you in touch with them.
That's great. So it's been great talking to you. Is there anything else that you want to share with us?
No, just I thank you for the time and the opportunity to talk about what I'm doing. And just, you know, encourage other architects, designers, students to stick with it. Keep your passion alive. You know, do what you've been put on this planet to do. The world needs you. You know, the world needs good designers, good architects, good problem solvers. And I think we're an overlooked group, but we're hardy. And I encourage folks to just keep plugging away and, you know, attain that dream.
The overlooked group of people is going to change, I think. I think we have some momentum moving us into some serious change, both in the profession and in design. And I'm really looking forward to the future of where architecture goes and the story of architecture.
Mm-hmm. Well, amen to that, brother.
Yeah. But thanks for being with us today, Collier. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you on Twitter.
Thank you, Mark. It's my honor. Appreciate it.
Check out the Entrepreneur Architect blog at entrearchitect.com for links to Collier's website and the many other sites mentioned during this episode. And while you're on the site, please sign up for my email list. There's a form on every page of the website, and I share exclusive content with my subscribers, and I'm still working on launching that weekly newsletter that only subscribers will receive, so stay tuned. My idea for that list, as you know, is to give a little extra love to those who love me, so please sign up. Don't forget to rate the podcast on iTunes and post a review of what you think. Those reviews and ratings are what determine how these podcasts are presented and how other entrepreneur architects will find us when searching on iTunes. And of course, the best way to get the word out about what we're doing here on the podcast and on the blog is to share them with your friends. So please share this with every architect you know. Until next time, I am Mark LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. Thanks for listening.
I've mentioned it to my family, but in terms of telling people like, oh yeah, we're doing this, I'm looking for projects, you got anything? Yeah. I'm not there yet because it scares the shit out of me.
Dreaming of launching your own architecture firm? Well, buckle up for a wild ride with Emerging, the podcast that shares what it's really like to start an architecture firm.
Where do we begin? We don't even know what type of business to formalize as. Is it an LLC? Is it an LLP? Like, how are taxes? I mean, the list is astronomical.
Season 1 featured founders Jeffrey, Lexi, and Chris owners of Level Studio Architecture, are your fearless guides on this unfiltered journey from napkin sketches to a thriving studio.
One evening, stumbled into one last dive, we sat at the bar and pondered our postgraduate futures. Amidst the conversation, a napkin became the canvas for our aspirations, sketching plans and milestones, sealing our heartfelt commitment and shared dreams.
In drawing down dreams on a napkin collectively, that then, you know, in your head, you've rooted like, oh, I'm connected to these people, like long term.
The process of starting an architecture practice brims with excitement and challenges, demanding meticulous planning, flawless execution, and unyielding resilience.
I kind of hate the term because it's so overly used, but I think everybody knows imposter syndrome. And I think it's so real to this day. I don't know if it's with everybody, but with me, I'm always questioning like, us, can we do this? Are we ready to do this? Are we prepared? Can we do it?
Did we just decide a name?
We did it, guys.
Oh my God.
One that came out of nowhere.
Woo!
It came out of nowhere. I liked it. I saw it.
Ready to turn your aspirations into reality? Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Emerging and chart your own path to architectural success.
Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entre Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entre Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.